And now for something completely different.
This is the Morrow Midday Show on ESPN Radio.
Let's do it.
And welcome to the Morrow Midday Show with Luke Morrow here on ESPN Radio. With you till 3 on this Tuesday with plenty to get to over the next few hours. Coming up, let you know where I've been right and wrong over the past week. Get to our Tuesday Top 10 as we always do. Plus, we'll get ready for the college football playoff rankings tonight and how everything will take care of itself in college football. React to last night at Cameron Indoor. Big win for the Lady Gamecocks. Yesterday, we'll get to that coming up. Plus, how would you redraft the rookie quarterbacks this year? How would you order the best openings in college football? And we're getting another attempt at spring football. Will this time things be different? Will it finally work out here in 2022 as we get ready for spring football? You can join the conversation throughout the afternoon. 843-721-9500 to give us a call. You can always text the show, 843-608-1734. Get to us on Twitter, at Morrow Middays, on Facebook, at ESPN Charleston, via email, studio, at kirkmanbroadcasting.com, or online at charlestonsportsradio.com. Just click on our show page, and there you can leave a comment for the show. You can find the latest versions of the show podcasted right there, or you can even take the Morrow Midday Show with you wherever you go by simply streaming us online at charlestonsportsradio.com. With you till 3 on this Tuesday. We always are transparent. We tell the truth around here. It's radio. You'd have no idea. But I'm still in North Carolina after the game last night. So I'm on the road heading back to the Lowcountry later on today. Joe's back in the studio. Joe, what's going on? How are you?
What's going on? Oh, you had a scary night last night, didn't you?
Yeah, certainly. So it wasn't how, you know, when you get ready to go play a game at Cameron Indoor and it was a real thrill to leading up to tip-off and everything, and you have a moment like that, you don't anticipate coming in the next day and talking about playing against Duke and the conversation being about a scary situation with the head coach of the Bulldogs, but unfortunately that was the case last night. Let's start there. We'll get to the Lady Gamecocks. I was planning on coming in and talking about what it was like last night for the Citadel to play at Duke. And then, as I had just mentioned, right, then things kind of change when right off the opening tip, a minute into the game, a scary situation in which Coach Baucom collapsed on the court at the bench of the Citadel. And great job by everyone involved there at Duke. Obviously, they're known to have one of the best hospitals in the entire country. So the staff on hand in the arena quickly got over there to Coach Baucom and addressed the situation. He walked off the floor on his own power, but with assistance. They attended to him in the back, and eventually he went to the hospital. I know he's still in the hospital today. He was hoping to be released and leave with the team this morning. I traveled on my own, hence why I'm still in North Carolina. But the team left this morning, and Coach was supposed to be heading back with the team. Unfortunately, he's still in the hospital. They hope, his family is hoping that he'll be released later on today, and they can head back to Charleston at that point. But we certainly hope for the best. As of now, all things seem to be, you know, okay, all things considered. He's in the hospital, being looked after at one of the better hospitals. And in terms of, severity, while I don't know what exactly happened, again, they expect for him to be released today. So it's not some sort of, it's not like he's fighting for his life. He'll be okay. He'll get back to Charleston, and then we'll see going from here what Coach has to do to take care of himself and make sure he's all right. But a scary situation last night. And the top priority, of course, is health, right? You want to make sure he's okay. We had just tipped it off. It was literally 70 seconds into the game. Duke hit a three. The Citadel came down and hit a three to tie it up. And it was right after Brent Davis made the three to tie it in the first 70 seconds, 3-3. And then the game stopped. And the broadcast position at Cameron Indoor, it's the highest broadcast booth in all of college basketball. You're up in the rafters. Now, the building's not that bad. So even though we're up, you know, the last row, it's still a great view. And it was a great spot to call it. I would love to call all games from that vantage point in that booth. It was very spacious. It was nice. In fact, they had to renovate that area. They call it the Crow's Nest. If you haven't been to Cameron Indoor, if you've ever watched a game, though, and they show the broadcasters, right, like Dickie V, they used to be up. You'd see the court down below them. They'd be up, and you'd see the banners behind them. They weren't courtside. There's no room courtside to put the fans. I felt bad for the media members who sit courtside because the Cameron crazies are literally on their shoulders. The media members are so squished up against the table. If you look down at media row, the media members, you know, like the newspaper writers, are all leaning forward. They can't even sit back. They're so squished up against the table, and the Cameron crazies are right on top of them. So the idea, the belief is that, A, there's not enough room anyways to put broadcasters down there, but B, even if you did, you wouldn't be able to hear anything because they'd be right in front of the Cameron crazies yelling the whole time. It wouldn't be ideal. So that's why they put you up top like that, which is a great spot. I'll get back to Coach Barkham in just a moment. It's a great spot, though, and I felt bad because – you know, I grew up in Connecticut, of course. I referenced that. Take a shot. It's the Morrow Midday Show drinking game anytime I reference Connecticut. But we had the Hartford Civic Center. And I remember one time in particular, we went to a game where we were so high up, like you couldn't even see what was going on. Because the way the Civic Center was built, and they may have fixed this by now, but the very last rows of the Civic Center, you're actually like higher than the roof, right? The ceiling dips down. So your vantage point is totally blocked. That's the case at Cameron Indoor. I felt bad for it's like two rows of people who sit behind the Crow's Nest, as they call it, which is where all of us broadcasters sit. It's the last two rows of Cameron Indoor, and then we're in the rafters. It's a structure that's essentially hanging from the ceiling, right? So it drops down right in front of these last two rows. So for a large portion, a pretty good portion, of Duke fans last night, instead of actually seeing the game, they're watching the back of my head. Right, they're looking at my dome for the whole time. And they have a TV there. You have to essentially watch the game on TV, and you can see a little bit. You can, like, bend down and look at the court. It's terrible. I don't know why they even sell seats there. But Duke, they've sold out every game at Cameron Indoor since November of 1990, including last night. So fans will pay and be there. It was a wild scene. Crowd was good. And it was a lot of fun. Now, in terms of this Crow's Nest, I was getting on this. I've gotten on the subject here of about three different things and have trailed off. The Crow's Nest, they renovated it just 3 years ago. It used to be just a wooden structure. And when I say the Crow's Nest, again, that's the broadcast. Those are the broadcast booths for all broadcasters, TV, radio, home visiting radio. They just renovated it 3 years ago, and it's really nice now. They have permanent stairs. It's all new. It's made out of, like, metal. It's a beautiful setup. I had plenty of room, like I said, nice chairs. It's all good. But up until 3 years ago, it was a wooden structure that was essentially hanging from the ceiling. This one is too, but it's also connected to the ground below. The old one wasn't. It was like, you know, you ever go to like the fair and you get on one of those ships and swinging back and forth. It's kind of like that. It's just hanging from the ceiling, and it was a wooden structure, and I don't know how sturdy it was. And the only way you could get up and down used to be these ladders. And originally, they were wooden ladders. And longtime radio broadcaster for Duke, he's told a story before of when he was trying to get down in the 80s, Bob Harris. During a game in the 80s, he was trying to climb down on this wooden ladder, and the ladder broke. And he was hanging from the Crow's Nest over a bunch of fans. And the fans had to help him down. They had to reach up and, you know, grab him and carefully pull him down to the stands so then he can go down to whatever, the bathroom, the locker room, wherever he was going during the game. It was probably halftime. He was going down maybe go grab a glass of water or something. The ladder breaks on him. He's hanging up there, and they have to grab him. Dickie V has told stories before about how one time he banged his head on like a pipe above him and cut his head open during a game, and he's bleeding from his head during a broadcast a few years ago. He once slipped coming down the ladder, and the fans had to essentially save him from an injury. Slipped, falling off the ladder. They had to catch him. It's crazy. You think of Cameron Indoor and this, you know, and it's Duke and Duke basketball, and it's a beautiful facility. And then they have this Crow's Nest that up until 3 years ago was like a death trap. So originally the ladders were wooden. Then they eventually came up with like these metal ladders, but they wouldn't be stuck there. You had to pull them up to the Crow's Nest once the game started because otherwise they would be blocking seats for the fans. If I'm painting this picture properly, it's just a Crow's Nest hanging above the last few rows of the stands. And so to climb down, you would drop a ladder down, and the fans would have to get out of the way. This is how it was up until just 3 years ago. And so they would have to pull the ladders up during the game. So once you got up there, you were kind of stuck up there. And if you wanted to get down, you'd have to drop the ladder down, and then the fans would have to get out of the way, and you're trying to climb down, and the ladder is not secure, and you got fans around. It's crazy. I was reading all about this because I've always heard about this vantage point. This is my first time at Cameron Indoor, and I've always heard that it's people have always said it's a bad broadcasting perspective. I actually thought it was great. But I've always heard, like, horror stories about it. So I was reading all about it, thinking, like, oh, boy, what is this going to be? I got to go up there with my equipment. I'm reading about wooden ladders breaking. I'm thinking, once I get up there, I'm going to be too afraid to leave until after the game. But in 2018, they renovated it. It's much nicer now. It's a permanent structure. It's all new. And I feel bad for the fans that get stuck looking at my back instead of the actual game if they're seated in the last couple of rows. When I first got up there, I didn't realize that was the case. And I turned around at one point, and there was a fan in a Duke jersey that just got to his seat, and we made eye contact, and he just kind of threw his hands up like, oh, are you? This is my seat? Like, you can't see anything. All you see is the row of broadcasters in what we call the crow's nest sitting in front of you, and there's a TV screen that you have to watch off of. And I was like, oh, sorry. I can't help you. I got a job to do. But it was a great experience. It was very cool. We get off the bus. The coolest part of the job, look, I'm just a lowly broadcaster. The coolest part of the job is when you go to venues like this and they make you feel like a big deal. I mean, when we played South Florida for Citadel football, we got a police escort. I've gotten police escorts before to and from the stadium. This was the day before the game. We got a police escort from the airport to the hotel just because they didn't want us to wait in traffic on the way to the hotel, right? Which I thought was a little much, but I appreciated it. You know, I thought that's a little unnecessary. But sure, please, get us there quickly. Right? And when something like that, it's like, oh, you know, this is kind of nice. You enjoy those luxuries. Last night, we got off the bus. There's a little bit of a walk to Cameron Indoor from the parking lot, and you had security guards the whole way with the rope that they were holding, you know, blocking off all the fans. And it was really eerie. As we walked through the campus, and it's my first time on campus, it's a beautiful campus, great facilities there at Duke. It was filled, packed with Duke fans, and everybody was so silent as we were walking into the building. I don't know if they were trying to figure out who the heck the Citadel is. I don't know if it just was a case of they weren't intimidated, they didn't care. It was very odd. It was like something out of a post-apocalyptic movie or something, except the place was packed. There were people all over. Security guards had to get them out of the way. We're all walking down this, I don't even know how to describe it. It's this big open area between the football stadium and the basketball stadium, and they have like a team store there, and it's this big like courtyard. And there's fans all over the place. And everyone was, you could hear a pin drop. It was dead silent as we went walking through. The only people you could hear were the occasional Citadel fans yelling out to the team, like, hey, go get them. That's all we heard. It was very odd. It was strange. But it was also kind of cool. And we get in there. We get into the locker room. The locker room is really nothing special. I mean, the Citadel, they have better locker rooms at their arena at McAllister than they do at Cameron Indoor. But it's Cameron Indoor, right? The whole facility is old but still very nice. It's old and new at the same time. It has that old feel, but a lot of it is renovated, of course, that it's modern. It's a modern old. It reminded me of an old school, except, you know, if you built it today to look like something from the 70s. Like, everything was still new, but they kept that old feel from when, I'm sure, it first opened in 1940. They tried to keep it pretty similar. And it was great. Great time. Environment was great. The vantage point was good. A lot of fun to broadcast from there. Very cool. And the Citadel played hard. They played well. Lost by 26, which, by the way, they covered the spread, so they did better than, you know, Vegas anticipated, or at least they set the number at. And they made more three-pointers than any team ever has in the 82-year history of Cameron Indoor. And they hung in there. It was a 10-point game in the second half. Lost by 26. They battled. It was a fun night for the Citadel. Afterwards, right, they were proud. The coaches were pleased with the effort. They were proud of the performance. And the Bulldogs hung in there against the number 5 team in the country. Now, circling back to Coach Baucom, as we started talking about how he unfortunately collapsed at the start of the game and went to the hospital, the top priority, of course, is making sure he's okay. It looks like he will be. But then the second half of the story is like the human element, in which you obviously feel for him dealing with whatever health issues, health scare he had last night. But on top of that, you know, he grew up in North Carolina. He was a state trooper for many years, used to listen to the games on the radio. And this was a real thrill for him to be able to coach at Cameron Indoor and go up against Coach K. And he had, of course, his wife was there with him. His son was on the bench with him last night, you know, for a special occasion, because that's how special of a game it was supposed to be. and then you tip it off 70 seconds in, and you have that scary situation. And now him and his family, instead of coaching at Cameron Indoor, they're on their way to a hospital right in North Carolina. So it was certainly I feel for him, and I hope he's okay. It seems like he is, and everything will be all right. But you feel for Coach and his family. They were looking forward to that game. They were supposed to play this game a year ago. And because of the pandemic, it got bumped to this year. So, you know, they've been looking forward to this for over a year. You get in there, you tip it off, 70 seconds in, he's got a health scare, he's got to go to the hospital. So just a terrible situation. But in the end, it looks like Coach Baucom will, they hope he'll be released today. So that's good news there. If you don't know his story, you can look it up. He was a state trooper in North Carolina. He had a heart attack on Christmas when he was just 30 years old. And his doctors told him, you can't be a cop anymore. You need something that's less stressful. And Coach decided that that would be coaching basketball. And he started off coaching JV basketball in North Carolina and worked his way up now to this point at the Citadel. And he missed some time when he was the coach at VMI when he had to have his pacemaker replaced. So, you know, he's had some heart issues in the past that he's lived with over the years. So we certainly hope everything's okay. He did not lose consciousness last night. He just told his assistant coach, Jack Castleberry, you know, he was in a lot of pain when he was down on the floor when he collapsed. And they got him off the floor into the hospital. So we hope the best for Coach. Now, when I'm on the road like this, I try to play the audio myself. So, Joe, you can let me know if this does not come over well. Some of these videos that are posted on Twitter are usually the audio is only on one channel. It doesn't translate well to the radio, but we're going to try this. This was Coach Baucom meeting Coach K before the game and Coach K talking about what it was like to come to Charleston and face the Citadel about 30 years ago. Let's see if this audio plays well over the radio.
Let me just shake hands with your guys.
They still talk about when you were down at Charleston the night the Kuwait, we invaded Kuwait.
It was an infamous day, and we ended up winning the national championship. And what happened that as a team that night really shaped us. It was unbelievable.
Wow, they still talk about it. So thank you. And thanks for all you've done for college basketball.
Thank you.
That was Coach Baucom meeting with Coach K, talking about the night that, and I still hear about this all the time, when Duke came to the Citadel and they sold out McAllister Fieldhouse about 30 years ago. And then at the end of that clip, it gets cut off, but Coach goes over to his assistant, Jack Castleberry, and he says, pretty cool, right? Right, to be able to talk with Coach K before the game like that. The Bulldogs, in the actual game itself, the Citadel lost by 26, as mentioned. Duke made 26 more foul shots than the Citadel. They attempted about 30 more foul shots than the Citadel, and that was the difference in the game. But the Bulldogs hung in there. All right, I did not plan to spend so much time talking about that experience last night or that moment. Also, never planned on coming in today and talking about Coach Baucom in the hospital when you're getting ready for the Citadel and Duke. That was the unfortunate situation last night. We hope for the best for Coach, and hopefully he can get back to town this afternoon at some point today and rejoin the Citadel for their next game this weekend. Let me shift to this. The Lady Gamecocks got a big win last night, or yesterday afternoon, while we were on the air, against UConn. They were down 13 early. They came back. They win by 16. They outscored UConn by about 29 points in the last 28 minutes. And it's a big-time win for a couple of different reasons. Number one, because they did beat UConn, right? That's the team that's been the white whale, that even when South Carolina has become one of the best programs in all of women's college basketball, right up there at UConn, they have still struggled to beat UConn. And I know they've done it in the past, but the majority of the time they have not. And when it's been a 1-2 matchup, they never have until yesterday. And they did it in come-from-behind fashion. So that's big. It's big to get over that hump and beat UConn. It's big in terms of how they did it, erasing that deficit. And the third and maybe most important part was also how they won, by limiting UConn to 3 points in the fourth quarter. 3 points, the number two team in the country, and they held them to 3 points yesterday. And we know, right, the old cliche is that defense wins championships, and that's how you win. And what's impressive about that is the heart for the Gamecocks and that fight and that drive. Number one, to erase the deficit, but number two, to do it with defense. Because a lot of times, defense is just effort. Right, defense is just wanting it more. Now, there are certain skills or abilities you need to have on the defensive end, certain positioning. Some guys will be too hunched over. You can't stay in front of somebody. Some guys have slow footwork. Right, some guys are out of position. They don't understand how help defense works. But for the most part, like rebounding, a lot of it is just effort. It's just the will, right? The ability to want to go play, to D up somebody and keep them. You will keep them from getting to the rim. Right, they are not getting past you. And so the Gamecocks showed that yesterday by holding UConn to just 3 points in the fourth quarter to come back and get a nice, a big-time win. Now, these two teams are scheduled to play each other later in the year, and that will be another good test. This was a good test as well, because you want to see early in the season, it's kind of like when the Citadel, bringing it back to them, opened the season by beating Pittsburgh 2 weeks ago in the opener. It's like, okay, well, we're ready to go. First game, we're beating an ACC team on the road. As I always say about football, week one's the biggest toss-up. You don't know what you're going to get. So in the first matchup early in the season, you saw yesterday the Gamecocks were ready to go. Maybe not in the first quarter. They started off slow. But they were the better team than UConn yesterday, so they're the better team to start the year. And now they'll play one another again. It's at the end of January in Columbia. And then that will be a big test, of course, as it is every time you face UConn. But because it'll help show the growth. All right, they just played yesterday. You saw what you saw from those two teams. Now they're going to play about 2 months from now. Let's see where the two teams are compared to one another 2 months from now. But that's obviously a huge win yesterday when it's a 1-2 matchup and you come out with a double-digit victory. That's a big-time win. And the Gamecocks now they've run through. They already have 3 top 10 wins in their first 6 games, all of which are away from home, and they just beat UConn yesterday for the second time ever. So a big-time start to the year for the Gamecocks and Dawn Staley's crew. And this was Dawn after the game on the court yesterday talking about the win for her Gamecocks team.
How nice is it for your team to come out, really start to finish, to stay locked in?
You know, I'm super proud of our kids. We asked them to focus in after the Buffalo game because we didn't play our best. I said we're going to take our best to win this tournament. And I just thought they played defensively. They gave it up. Offensively, we just took the shots that they gave.
She missed the putback last season. The game went to overtime. For her to come out and play the way that she did today.
It's time. It's time for Aaliyah Boston to be the dominant player that she is. I think she sells herself short a lot of times. So we got to get in her. She's got to be dominating because she's a dominating player.
Hey, there's no better way to end a trip in the Bahamas, huh?
No better way, but we got to go home. We got to rest up. This game, it takes a lot out of you. And get ourselves going at Colonial Life Arena.
So now when you go back, your schedule's not easy. What are the things that you want to continue to build on that you all saw from your team here?
I think for the most part, what we want to do is it's physically challenging. We got to get better mentally. That's the separation from good to great teams. So this was a mental challenge for us that we're going to utilize and take with us for the rest of the season.
Dawn Staley after the win yesterday in the Bahamas against UConn. By the way, ton of Gamecock fans there. I mean, that's not a bad trip. Thanksgiving week, you go to the Bahamas, but they interrupted her press conference by chanting outside the door for the Go Gamecocks. Dawn Staley posted a video on Twitter of the lobby is filled with Gamecock fans, so they made that place theirs. You know, a lot of people were upset that Clemson played in Charleston last week and it was like it was road games. There weren't enough Clemson fans there. Well, for the Gamecocks all the way in the Bahamas, they had plenty of support as they got a big win against UConn yesterday. Big-time start to the year for Dawn Staley and her number one team in the country. When we come back, college football playoff rankings come out once again tonight. And we always debate about these things, and I'm guilty of it as well. But at least for this year, it looks like the playoff is just going to figure itself out anyways. The playoff has essentially already begun, and we'll get to that next. It's the Morrow Midday Show right here on ESPN Radio.
Now back to the Morrow Midday Show. On ESPN Radio.
Coming up, the latest college football playoff rankings coming out tonight. But we may not even need a committee. It's all just going to take care of itself anyways. We'll get to that here in the Morrow Midday Show with Luke Morrow on ESPN Radio. The rankings for college football as we get ready for Rivalry Week here this weekend and Thanksgiving week. Some big-time games coming up later on this week. We will be on the air Friday. I told you yesterday we won't. Well, some things have changed. So we'll be on the air Friday to get ready for Clemson and South Carolina and all the other games. So on Friday, we will rank these rivalry matchups that we get this time every year in terms of the level of importance for this weekend. And suddenly Clemson and South Carolina, while there may not be, you know, a trip to the to a bowl game or the playoff or a conference championship on the line, still you have two teams that are a little bit closer to one another than they have been in years. South Carolina's feeling good coming off their win, and Clemson's favored by about 11.5 for Saturday's game. So we will get to that later on this week. But the college football playoff rankings set to come out once again here this evening. And when you look at ESPN's FPI for the college football playoff, they have the usual suspects at the top, of course. Georgia has the best chance to make the playoff. ESPN's FPI gives them a 98% chance. Nothing's 100%. So I will say Georgia really should be about 99.5. Right, unless they lose to Georgia Tech this weekend, and there's always a chance, but I think Georgia is already in. Alabama actually has the second highest percentage on ESPN's FPI at 66%. Now, if Alabama loses to Georgia, maybe we will get the first two-loss team in the playoff, but for Alabama, you know, they haven't put together, I think they're living a little bit off of brand name, their own brand and also the rest of the SEC, because they have some close wins against some not-so-good teams this year. Cincinnati, by the way, is third on ESPN's FBI projection. They have a 65% chance of making the playoff. You get to Ohio State at 55%, Notre Dame 52%, and then next in line is Michigan all the way down at 29%. We always debate about the college football playoff, and we've been doing it here on the Morrow Midday Show for months, right, since the rankings first came out about 6 weeks ago. And we always blame the committee and this and that and yada, yada, yada. But this year in particular, it may not matter. We can have these debates. We can complain. We can blame the committee. But as I said earlier this football season, in the case of Cincinnati, you really have nobody else to blame if you don't make the playoff this year, because there has been so much chaos that the door is open for any of these other teams to step up. And if you can't, right, that's your fault. I mean, the opportunity is there. Now, for Cincinnati in particular, they could win out and maybe still not be put in. And they could say, well, what more could you want from us? So for Cincinnati, they may be the outlier in this conversation. But the rest of the teams, they've had their chances. And it's what makes college football so great, and it's also what helps out in this whole conversation of the playoff. We don't even need to have a lot of these debates because the teams are figuring it out. Right, like Michigan State this past week, that was their playoff game. They got embarrassed by Ohio State. They took care of themselves, and he said, okay, yep, nope, they're not a playoff team. But we're already getting the playoffs. If you exclude Cincinnati, say you're not a Group of Five guy, and I asked you, okay, out of Cincinnati, who would be your top four teams right now? I'm sure you'd say Georgia, Alabama, top two, Ohio State as well. Those would be your top three. And you could have a lot of debate around that fourth team. A lot of people would probably say Michigan, one-loss team out of the Big Ten. Right, so if those are your final four as of today, if we exclude Cincinnati or even say Notre Dame, exclude the independents or non-Group of Fives. Well, of course, you take those four teams, and what's coming up? Well, Michigan will play Ohio State, Alabama scheduled to play Georgia in the SEC title game. It's like the playoff has already begun. In the Big Ten, we got down to those three teams, Ohio State, Michigan State, Michigan. They're playing a round robin these final 2 weeks. They're going to figure it out themselves. In the Big 12, it's down to Oklahoma State and Oklahoma. Well, guess what? They're going to play one another. We'll figure out who the best team is from the Big 12 that could represent that conference in the playoff. Even if you wanted to get down to outside of the Power 5 conferences, the next best team, well, Notre Dame's the best independent. Cincinnati's the best Group of Five. Those are two groups, the Indies and the Group of Fives, that are always fighting for that respect, for that opportunity to get into the playoff. Well, guess what? Those two teams played each other this year. Cincinnati won. So if you're only going to take one of those two teams, I mean, Cincinnati beat Notre Dame, they should probably go in. The playoff has been ongoing, and it's why you love college football, because you know one loss could change everything, right? It's the drama that comes week in and week out, the urgency of the sport. Michigan State just had their season end. Michigan will probably have their season end this weekend. Oklahoma, Oklahoma State, one of those teams is going to lose, they're going to have their season end. Oregon was another one. We thought maybe the Pac-12 could get a team in the playoff. Well, they had their playoff this past week, and Oregon got embarrassed by Utah in the worst loss under Mario Cristobal. Right, it's just taking care of itself. The playoffs are already ongoing. The playoffs have already begun, and all these teams the perfect opportunities. They're playing one another. They're doing the job for the committee. Instead of the committee sitting down and looking at the Big Ten, right, if we go back, say, 2 weeks, and you look at the Big Ten, you say, okay, Ohio State has one loss, Michigan has one loss, Michigan State has one loss. How do we order these teams? It doesn't matter because they're all going to play each other, and they're going to eliminate themselves along the way. Michigan State just got knocked out. That was their playoff last week. They're done. Season's over. Next round of the playoff, Ohio State, Michigan playing this weekend. One of them's going to be knocked out, crossed off, eliminated. You move on. All right, Alabama, Georgia in the SEC, don't worry. They'll play each other, and we'll figure things out. Alabama will either eliminate themselves or they'll win that game and put themselves in the playoff. But as we get ready for the rankings tonight and we head into the final week of the regular season, you have eight teams, I believe, that are still in the picture. And five of them, maybe four, control their own destiny. You could debate the fifth one. Georgia obviously controls their own destiny. As I said, I already think they're in. Now, obviously, they lose to Georgia Tech. Things could change. You lose to Georgia Tech, you lose to Alabama, you have two losses, maybe not so fast. But I don't think they lose to Georgia Tech. I don't even think they lose to Alabama. I think Georgia, for all intents and purposes, are already in. Alabama controls their own destiny. If they continue to win out, they'll be in. If they lose to Georgia, there's still a chance you get a two-loss Alabama in the playoff, depending on how other things play out. But in regards to Alabama, as I said earlier, you know, kind of living off the brand name, their own brand in the SEC. They've played Arkansas, LSU, and Florida, three teams that are a combined 7-15 in the SEC, and all three of those teams played Alabama to one score. We've seen those vulnerabilities. I'm not so sure they are the second-best team in the SEC. But I also wouldn't put it past Nick Saban to get things figured out just in time to beat Georgia in the SEC championship. And then you get to the Big Ten. Ohio State and Michigan, as they just touched on, they control their own destiny. Whichever team wins out the rest of the way, they'll be in the playoff as a one-loss Big Ten champion. It comes down to this weekend for Ohio State and Michigan. Those are the four teams that really do control their own destiny. And they all play, well, not all of them, but they play one another. Right? The top two play one another, the next two play one another, and that's why the playoff has already begun. Then you get to that gray area, which would be Cincinnati. And we could debate whether Cincinnati controls their own destiny or not. I think they still will need some help from others, and therefore the committee as well. But you figure if Ohio State or Michigan's going to knock off one or the other, right, and then maybe Alabama gets a second loss, that crosses them off the list, there could still be enough chaos. Teams could still beat up on one another enough that Cincinnati does easily slide in, assuming they win out. Now, Cincinnati should be in. I've gone back and forth on Cincinnati, but you look at the fact that the teams ahead of them will all play one another, and we could have a very much have a situation in which Cincinnati and Georgia are the only two undefeated teams by year's end. And Cincinnati, you know, has a good win against Notre Dame, and they've at least won their games, and nobody else has stepped up to take that spot. So Cincinnati, we could debate on whether they actually control their own destiny or not. It depends on if you believe the committee would respect them enough to actually put them in. Then you get to that next group of three teams that may need a little help, and that's Notre Dame and the two teams out of the Big 12, Oklahoma and Oklahoma State. Now, Notre Dame has a very underrated case or resume. We've kind of forgotten about Notre Dame. I think part of it is that you see Notre Dame get blown out in the playoff every year, so you'd rather just ignore them. You've blocked that out of your memory. You don't want to think about Notre Dame going back in the playoff. But in the month of November, they've outscored opponents 117-9. They're playing great football right now. Their only loss is to Cincinnati, which is probably the best loss of any of these top 10 teams. And they have the third best strength of victory amongst these ranked teams. So Notre Dame has one of the better resumes. They've been playing really good football. They have only one loss. Obviously, being an independent doesn't help because they don't have that conference championship game to further their resume. But they do have three members on the committee who have ties to Notre Dame, which is where this committee thing, you know, does get a little sketchy in terms of some biases. There's three on the committee that do have connections to Notre Dame. We'll see if that helps. And then you get to Oklahoma and Oklahoma State, who are battling for that spot from the Big 12. You could make the case that they control their own destiny as well, but not necessarily. I could see a situation in which a one-loss Big 12 champ is left out by the committee, but they're in a pretty good spot as well. And I think as we get ready for the rankings tonight, those are the only eight teams you have to focus on. Half of them truly do control their own destiny. The other four, we could debate. I think they need a little help, but it comes down to those eight teams. And the great thing about this, and all the debates we always have about the college football playoff, is that it's all sorting itself out throughout the season, and it will continue to do so. Michigan against Ohio State this weekend in a playoff game, Georgia and Alabama next weekend in a playoff game, Oklahoma against Oklahoma State in a playoff game. The playoffs have already begun, and it's what makes college football so great. Coming up, we'll continue to talk about college football. I mentioned Clemson, South Carolina this week. Dabo gave, you know, for nitpicking a little bit of a backhanded compliment to the Gamecocks on his coach's show last night. We'll get to that coming up. We got plenty to do here throughout the afternoon. It's the Moore Midday Show right here on ESPN Radio.
Spend lunch with Luke.
Attention campers, lunch has been canceled today due to lack of hustle. Deal with it.
On the Moore Midday Show.
It's the Moore Midday Show with Luke Morrow here on ESPN Radio. Coming up in a little bit, I'll let you know where I've been right, where I've been wrong. We'll get to a Tuesday Top 10, plus the USFL trying to make things work with spring football once again. We'll see if that plays out or how that pans out. Got plenty to do throughout the afternoon here on the Moore Midday Show. We also have to figure out the whereabouts of Joe last night. Joe, I saw there was a wrestler attacked by a fan at Monday Night Raw last night. I want to make sure you weren't in New York City at this wrestling event attacking, who was it, Seth Rollins? I saw the video online, a crazy scene.
Yeah, it was Seth Rollins who was attacked. I don't think you really have so much have to worry about me. It's Bobby you have to worry about. He's the one that really gets all wrapped up and everything.
I could see Bobby attacking wrestlers in the sense of he is so tired of the wrestling. Right? He's taking it out on the wrestlers. He dislikes the wrestlers because he's so tired of wrestling. I could see that angle. But last night, this fan, I don't even know how he got. I saw the video online, actually, on the bus last night coming back from the basketball game to the hotel. I don't even know how he got in that position. And he came out and tried to make a pretty nice tackle on Rollins. It's a scary situation. You're a wrestler and a fan comes out and attacks you. And this guy, he was a big boy, 24-year-old from, I think they said, from Brooklyn, who got arrested last night.
Yeah, 24-year-old Elisa Spencer. And he was charged by the NYPD with attempted assault and attempted violation of arts and cultural affairs.
I mean, look, we do devote some time to talk wrestling here in the show each week, but if you're at a wrestling event and you get so angry over what you're seeing that you want to go attack a wrestler, or you think that you have, like, the chops to get in the ring or something, I mean, come on, what are you doing here? You're 24, that's a grown man, 24 years old. What are you doing running out there trying to attack wrestlers?
And
enjoy the show.
Yeah, say what you will about how the winners and losers are determined in wrestling, but a lot of these guys, they are legit tough.
Yeah, so I wouldn't run after anybody like that. Plus, with the security around, they got to him pretty quick. Saw that video last night. That was the most exciting thing I've seen from the wrestling world since I stopped watching years ago.
Yeah, and Rollins did refuse medical attention, so he seems to be okay.
Oh, well, that's good. It was a pretty good takedown, though. And then Rollins got him in a headlock, but you know, not a bad. He got a running start, caught him by surprise, took him down, not bad. Now he gets to spend the night in the clink last night, I'm sure. By the way, on Twitter, somebody said, stop using the term control your own destiny, because you can't control. Destiny can't be controlled. Just say that they control their own future when talking about these college football playoff teams. I've actually heard this year for the first time people say control their own destination. I don't remember ever hearing that term in the past. That's not a bad one either. They control their own destination. We could have a debate, a philosophical debate about whether you control your own destiny or not. We're not going to. Tony Robbins, I was just Googling this because I was curious, and Tony Robbins, I see here, has 8 powerful ways to control your own destiny. So Tony would tell you can do it. But anyways, semantics. You could say destiny. You could say future. You could say location. But you get the idea when talking about these college football teams. There are 4 that control their own path, at least 4. And there are some others that need some help. Use whichever term you prefer. Speaking of which, by the end of the week, we'll get more into the rivalry games this weekend and certainly focus on Clemson and South Carolina. This is not a big deal. I'm not looking to try to go after anybody. I just saw the, clips, quotes make the rounds from the coach's call-in show. And Dabo last night was talking about the Gamecocks. And when talking about Shane Beamer, he said he should be considered for the SEC Coach of the Year. What a great job he has done this year. And that's a nice quote. And I'm sure Dabo certainly means it like that, you know, generally speaking. But to me, and again, this is not some sort of big deal. I'm not trying to start any sort of controversy. But that's like when you say to people that you outkicked your coverage, right, because they have like a wife or a husband that is much better looking than them. And you mean it as a compliment, but it's one of those backhanded compliments. When you say, like, wow, you really outkicked your coverage, that's not – and people, oh, thank you. It's not really – they're not saying anything positive about you. They're saying, like, how could this schlub get somebody like that? Right? They're not – they're putting you down in the process. They're complimenting the person you're with. Now, maybe you don't care because, hey, you're with the beautiful person, so what do you care what they think about you or what anybody thinks about you? You know, you outkicked your coverage. You got somebody better than anybody would have thought. But point being – that's not a compliment to you. That's a compliment to the person you're with while they're also putting you down. And when they say, like, yes, you know, a potential 6-6 wins, wow, he did a really great job. He should be the coach of the year. That was fantastic. It's true, and it's a compliment, but it's also kind of a backhanded compliment speaking to the state of which the program's in. That by getting to 500 and making a bowl game, it's like, wow, all right, we got to give this guy all the awards. He's doing a great job. And I've heard a lot of that this week, and I'm not saying it's wrong. It just speaks to the situation in which Shane Beamer took over. Where the conversation now is about him becoming, you know, being the SEC Coach of the Year, getting votes for the Coach of the Year in the SEC. Kirby Smart, I imagine, will most likely be the winner of that award. And then you get to Shane Beamer and Sam Pittman as well. And Mike Leach should get some honorable mentions for getting Mississippi State. You know, they have a winning record. They're going to a bowl game, winning record in the SEC. He's beaten three top 20 teams. A good job is being done. In fact, you can make the case for Josh Heupel. And now that I'm running through this off the top of my head, I'm realizing that a lot of these young coaches, if it wasn't for the last couple of weeks, you can make a strong case for Brian Harsin. You know, a lot of these newer coaches in the SEC, Lane Kiffin obviously doing a great job. They're having a lot of success where you then lose Dan Mullen, Ed Orgeron's out of a job. You know, some of the other coaches that came into the year expected to be some of the better ones are the ones that have struggled and are now out of or soon to be out of gigs in the case of Ed Orgeron. Beamer certainly considers or should deserve, he deserves consideration for the award. But what it's also saying along the way is just speaking to the fact that that six wins is an overachievement. And it is. Vegas had the Gamecocks at just 3.5 victories. Most people didn't see this coming. So as the talk talks about the job done by Beamer, it is, you know, deserved and it's a good thing, but it also speaks to, like, yeah, I mean, six wins at South Carolina, that program. You see that talent or where they were the last couple of years. It's amazing they even won six games this year. It's a little bit of a reality check, I guess, in the position that you're in, but also a great job done by Beamer to get them to that bowl game in year one, because that's the goal, or that was the goal. That was like their championship this year. Get to that bowl game, and that's a very successful year one for Beamer. That's what it's been. And now if you beat Clemson, that's the cherry on top before you go to that bowl game. Later on in the week, we'll talk about the most important rivalry matchups this week, and obviously get all into Clemson and South Carolina as the week moves forward. As we move forward, again, coming up next hour, I'll let you know where I was right and wrong, get to our top 10. I also broke one of my own rules here in the past week, but I'm not the only one. We'll get to that a little bit later on as well, and plenty more throughout the afternoon. We'll wrap up hour one when we come back. It's the Morrow Midday Show right here on ESPN Radio.
This is the Morrow Midday Show on ESPN Radio.
Wrapping up hour one here on the Morrow Midday Show with Luke Morrow on ESPN Radio. Coming up in about 10 minutes, as always, I'll check myself. Let you know where I've been right and wrong as we head into Thanksgiving. Let you know what I've gotten right and wrong over the past week. Of course, we'll be on the air tomorrow. We're not quite at Thanksgiving just yet. Get to our Tuesday top 10 later on involving Thanksgiving. And a whole lot more throughout the afternoon. How would you redraft quarterbacks? Would Trevor Lawrence still be the number one pick? We'll get into all that throughout the afternoon. I broke my own rule this past week, but I obviously am not alone. In fact, I think I'm seeing it more now this year than ever before. And I've always said before, can we do one holiday at a time? Can we wait till Thanksgiving is over before we dive into Christmas? Right, Friday, this Friday, Black Friday, that's when the Christmas stuff can start. And I usually am pretty firm with that. But I did break my own rule, so I got to tell them myself, right? Because we keep ourselves honest around here, like we're going to do coming up next hour. I let you know where I've been right and wrong. Well, on the drive over to North Carolina from Tennessee, I have to admit, I threw on Home Alone 2 in the car. Now, I couldn't watch it. I'm driving. I'm a responsible driver. But I love the movie so much, I just need to hear it. Tim Curry's so good in that film. And I listened. It helped me get from Tennessee. It was a long drive. What do you want from me? I'm listening to Home Alone. And I have to be honest. For some reason, I got into the Christmas mood on Sunday, and I also put on some Christmas music in the car as well. I'm driving through the hills of Tennessee into North Carolina. It was cold out, a little frigid, and I had some Johnny Mathis going and Bing Crosby and some Christmas music going on Sunday, well before the Thanksgiving holiday. So even I broke my own rules. Then we get to the game last night, and the Duke cheerleaders were already performing Christmas songs last night. They were dancing, the dance team, I guess, not the cheerleaders. They're performing the Christmas songs, you know, like the Santa hats on last night. We're not even at Thanksgiving yet. Everybody's breaking the rules. I'm guilty as well. And I'm seeing it more this year, I think, because of how difficult the pandemic has been or the last year and a half and how miserable things have been for a lot of people at times. That who doesn't want more festive cheer and joy this time of year and get ready for Christmas? I'm still looking forward to Thanksgiving. We'll get to our rankings a little bit later on in regards to Thanksgiving. But I also have to be honest. While everyone else is cheating, and I've always had these firm rules, you have to wait till Friday, at the same time, what is Thanksgiving most about? I've always said the three Fs, food, family, and football. And maybe not in that order. But the NFL, Thanksgiving is the NFL's big day. And I've been fighting for years that people should care more about Thanksgiving and wait on Christmas. But you know what? The NFL has been telling us for years they don't care about Thanksgiving because they give us the Lions every year. And this year, we're stuck with Tim Boyle on Thanksgiving and the winless Lions. And now Justin Fields is injured. And there are reports today that the Bears are going to fire their head coach after Thursday's game, which is awkward if that's the case. And he already knows it today. And he's just coaching out the string here this week. And then he's going to get fired on a holiday, Thanksgiving, later on this week. But you're giving me Tim Boyle against Andy Dalton on Thanksgiving with two teams that have a total three victories this year. They scored a combined 23 points between the two of them this past Sunday. And that's what you're giving me on Thanksgiving. So it dawned on me. I've been sitting here pounding on the table. We need to wait until after Thanksgiving before we can celebrate Christmas. We need to give Thanksgiving enough respect. And you know what? The NFL hasn't been giving Thanksgiving enough respect by subjecting us to the Detroit Lions every year and this miserable team and this year Tim Boyle on Thanksgiving. And then we also get Trevor Siemian on Thanksgiving. We get Andy Dalton on Thanksgiving. Bunch of turkeys going out there to play quarterback Thursday for the NFL. You're telling me you don't care enough about Thanksgiving? Then maybe I should be able to watch Home Alone 2 before Thanksgiving as well in my car ride to North Carolina. I hope you look forward to watching the 0-9-1 Lions and Tim Boyle on your turkey day as you try to have a nice holiday with the family and you have to watch that crappy team. Enough of traditions. Change the rules. Get the Lions off Thanksgiving and let's give more care to that holiday. Hour two next. I'll let you know where I've been right and wrong. It's the Mara Midday Show on ESPN Radio.